Well, today we are beginning a new sermon series on the book of Proverbs. And Proverbs is a special book in the Bible that our new musical for the summer, Camp Wisen Up, is all based on the Proverbs. And I realized I don't think I have ever preached on Proverbs, except maybe at a few funerals with some of the Proverbs, but never a sermon series. So this is kind of new territory for me. We're looking at the book of Proverbs. Now, it's a big book, and there's lots to it, and I can't cover it all even in a summer. So I suggest that you take this on as a summer project as well. Maybe in the morning, go out in the yard with a cup of tea or coffee and read a few Proverbs to start the day and think about them, because there's a lot to Proverbs. I have student Bible here that I was going to read from. There's an introduction to the book of Proverbs, and it had a really cute idea here, I thought. It says that Proverbs is to wisdom like Sesame Street is to the alphabet. And when you think about that, I love that the show Sesame Street. I mean, you start out in Sesame Street and maybe the Muppets are singing some kind of a Beatles song like let it be, and then the B, letter B comes up, right? And then you have something with Bert and Ernie doing something in the bathtub and realizing that you got to share your little ducky or something. And then the count. Ha ha ha, the count comes on and counts all the bees, maybe. And then there's a big bird that just happens to begin with B, and a lot of other things go on. But by the end of the program, the child knows that B makes the ba sound. And they have a little other ideas that help them to get along in life. Well, that's the way Proverbs is. It's kind of like a lot of little one-liners that seem to not make a lot of sense together. You know, where is the chronology of all this? But if you spend some time with it, as it says in the introduction, you spend some time with this book, then you'll gain some subtle and practical understanding of life, just like the kids do as they watch Sesame Street. So here we are in the season of Pentecost, and our worship setting was to celebrate Pentecost and the tongues of fire that came. But really, the dove that's symbolic of the Holy Spirit can also remind us of wisdom, because wisdom is often equated with the Holy Spirit. And all the little candles there remind us of all the little points of wisdom that are in this book of Proverbs that shed light onto our life. So let's look at this book of Proverbs and hope that it can shed some light on our life. We'll begin at the beginning. Very good place to start, don't you think? With the first verse, 1 through 7. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. For learning about wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for gaining instruction in wise dealing, righteousness, justice, and equity. To teach shrewdness to the simple, knowledge and prudence to the young. Let the wise also hear and gain learning, and the discerning acquire skill. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Well, as we look at that, these first verses remind us that there's something in Proverbs for everyone. If you're simple, that means maybe you're not too smart. Well, if you're simple, then this is going to teach you how to be shrewd. If you're young, there are a few of you here that are young, right? If you're young, it's going to teach you knowledge and prudence. If you're wise, are there any of us here who are wise? Well, it says we will also learn some things. And if we're already able to discern a lot, it's going to make us our skills even better. So there's something here for everyone. But did you catch what is the beginning of knowledge? What was it? Did you catch that? The fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, as I was telling the kids, I mean, the fear of the Lord, I have never preached a sermon on the fear of the Lord. When I think about the fear of the Lord, I think of those old time preachers like Jonathan Edwards and his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. And I kind of get this picture of God holding this person over the fires of hell. And if the person does wrong, he's going to let him go and get there. You know, it's like, ooh, that's scary. And that's not the way I think of God. It's not the way that Jesus tells us about God. And so I've never thought a whole lot about preaching on the fear of the Lord. But as I tried to tell the kids, there's a different kind of fear here. And as I read Proverbs, I counted 19 times that it talks about the fear of the Lord. There may be more. I was just me counting them. But it promises wonderful things to those people who fear the Lord. Things like knowledge of God. Well, I'd like to have knowledge of God. It talks about length of life. Oh, it'd be nice to have length of life. Yesterday we were at a wedding and one of my favorite people is 95 years old and she was just as great as she used to be. Oh, it was so wonderful. She's still preaching and she had to get home to get her Sunday school class ready for that. Length of life. You know, this is what I want to be like. Irma Ward. All right. It helps you to walk upright as well. And it helps you to have a secure fortress and a fountain of life and even gives you wealth, honor, and praise. Now, isn't there something there that you'd like? I mean, those look like pretty good things if you fear the Lord, right? So we need to think about what does this mean if we fear the Lord? Well, like I said with the kids, most of the time when we think about fear, we think about those things that will hurt us or harm us or give us pain. And those are the things that we fear. But if we broaden our idea of what fear means and think about it in this more positive sense, think about somebody that maybe you really respect. Put their picture up there. Maybe it was a teacher. Those of you that were just graduating, maybe you had a special teacher that was just wonderful, made class just exciting and great, and you thought they were wonderful. Or maybe it was a coach or a boss or a neighbor or a relative, somebody that you really respected, and you have a sense, along with the love, there's a little bit of fear there, in not because you are afraid of what they will do to you if you do something that they don't like, but rather you're afraid that you will hurt them if you do something that they won't like. I mean, I can understand that when I think, I would put my dad's picture up there. I thought the world of my dad. But there was a sense in which I was afraid to do something that I knew he wouldn't like, not because I thought he would punish me. I can't remember my dad really ever punishing me much, but because I didn't want to hurt him. And so that's the kind of fear that we're talking about, a fear that has reverence and awe to it. So as we talk about fear on this day, keep those words reverence and awe in your mind. You have reverence and awe there. Well, as we think about that, there are two important things that I think we need to keep in mind as we think about fearing the Lord. And the first is that we need to realize how great God is, especially in comparison with us. We are so used to seeing things from our perspective that we need to take a moment just to think about how great God is. For example, here's Jenny Hartwig. She's one of our graduates today. Is Jenny here? I don't know if she made it. She has to go to work. There she is. Oh, she's out there. All right. Well, this is a picture of her. Oh, right there. All right. She's here. Right there's Robert. Well, this is a picture of her taken a few years ago, but it's been on my computer for a long time. A couple years ago when we picked prayer partners, I happened to pick her name and I prayed for her every day. And so I had this cute picture on my computer to remind me to pray for her every day. Well, I just left it there because it's such a cute picture, and I thought she wouldn't mind if I prayed every once in a while for it too. But if you think about that, if you put her in perspective, she's tall and good and athletic and all that. But if you put her that picture in the context of the whole gymnasium. She doesn't look quite as big anymore. But that gymnasium, she happened to be in the field house at the University of Michigan Dearborn campus. And if you think about that campus, you look at that from the satellite, it's right there. There's little Jenny right in there. Can you see that little dot there? And but then she looks even a little smaller. And actually, that campus looks smaller if you look at it and see all of Dearborn. And then even Dearborn looks pretty small if you see it in Michigan, in that, you know, from the satellite. And then even Michigan looks smaller if you see it from the satellite in the North America. And that's even smaller if you think of her in the Western Hemisphere. And it's even smaller if you think of it from the whole Earth. And even smaller if you think of it from the Milky Way. Now, I didn't know where to put that arrow in the Milky Way, because I'm not quite sure where the Earth is there, and Google.com doesn't go quite, maps don't go out that far. But anyway, you know, God knows where to look in that great universe, because that's only, this is Milky Way, and that's only a little part of the universe that God created. And God knows where to look in that universe, where to look in that Earth, where to look in that hemisphere, where to look in that continent, where to look in that state, where to look in that town, where to look in that campus, where to look in that field house to find Jenny. You know, God is so great and so awesome that it kind of makes us feel rather small. But it also needs to make us feel rather important, because God knows where we are. And not only that, but God created us in such a marvelous way. Now, instead of zooming out on this picture of Jenny, let's zoom in and see her cute face. There she is. But now just think, God made eyes and nose and ears and all that to do special things, right? And let's just zoom in a little bit on her eye. And you know, if we zoom in even farther, we can see her retina in the back of her eye. And in the back of that retina, there are little cells that are reaching out to each other. And in those cells, there is a tiny little protein called melanopsin. Do you know about melanopsin? Do you know that that tiny little protein that is in that cell, in that eye, absorbs light, and it triggers a cascade of signals to the brain that lets the brain know about brightness? And through those signals, the body is synchronized to the rhythm of the rising and the setting of the sun. And that rhythm causes alertness in the person. It helps in our producing sleep hormones, and it helps in regulating the body temperature, and it helps in the organ functions. Are you impressed? It's amazing what you can find out when you search for a picture of a cell in the eye. Now, that was from a study in Brown University. I was pretty impressed by that some little protein in the back of my eye makes the difference of how alert I am. And since I didn't get enough sleep last night, I think it needs a little bit more there. You know, I don't know. But just think about that, and how awesome that is that God planned all that. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I bet you Jenny didn't know all that was in that picture, did she? I mean, you know, there was that cell and that retina and that eye and that cute face, and there she is. And I've been praying for her all these years using that picture, and I didn't know anything about that melanopsin, but it's there. Isn't it amazing how great God is? So as we think about the greatness of God and what all God has done, we have this reverence for God. But, you know, we can't understand it all, and we can't know it all. Maybe if I search the internet for some other thing, I'd find other new little piece of information, because we can't always know everything. I mean, the more we know, the more we don't know. God is great and awesome, and for many years, people have wondered about God. And I think the basic question that people ask about God and God's existence is, did God create evil? Well, there was an email that came the other day. Actually, it came quite a few months ago, but I just was cleaning out my desk this week, and I found it, and I thought, I think that's kind of neat. And I have to read it, though, because it's a little complicated, but it's a story about a professor in college, and I thought, since this is graduation and we have all these college graduates as well, they could identify with this. But this is a story that happened in a college classroom with one of those professors that thinks they're so smart, and they just prove that God didn't exist, because if God created everything, then God would create evil, and then that would mean that God was evil. And since we think God is good, how could God be evil? So God is just a myth, right? So that professor had just made that age-old argument. And another student raised his hand and said, "Can I ask you a question, professor?" "Of course," replied the professor. The student stood up and said, "Professor, does cold exist?" The professor replied, "Of course it exists. Have you never been cold?" The other students in the class snickered at the young man's question. The young man replied, "In fact, sir, cold does not exist. According to the laws of physics, what we consider cold is in reality the absence of heat. Every body or object is susceptible to study when it has or transmits energy. Heat is what makes a body or matter have or transmit energy. Cold does not exist. We have created this word to describe how we feel if we do not have enough heat." The student continued, "Professor, does darkness exist?" The professor responded, "Of course it does." The student replied, "Once again, sir, you are wrong." I wonder what kind of grade he's going to get from this guy. "Darkness does not exist either. Darkness is in reality the absence of light. Light we can study, but not darkness. In fact, we can use Newton's prism to break white light into many colors and study the various wavelengths of each color. But you cannot measure darkness. How can you know how dark a certain space is? You measure the amount of light present." Isn't that correct? Darkness is the term used by people to describe what happens when there is not enough light present. Finally, the young man asked the professor, "Sir, does evil exist?" Again, the professor said, "Of course, as I've already said, we see it every day. It's in the daily example of man's inhumanity to man. It is in the multitude of crime and violence everywhere in the world." To this, the student replied, "Evil does not exist, sir. At least it does not exist unto itself. Evil is simply the absence of God. It is just like darkness and cold, a word people have created to describe the absence of God. God did not create evil. Evil is the result of what happens when people do not have enough of God's love present in their hearts. It is like the cold that comes when there is not enough heat or darkness. It's like the cold that comes when there's not enough heat, or darkness that comes when there is not enough light." The professor was quiet. The student's name was, have you guessed who the student might have been? Albert Einstein. That's why I had to read it. I couldn't get that all myself, right? Well, I don't know if this was actually a conversation, a genuine conversation, but I thought the thought behind it was interesting. I don't know that I completely understand it or that I completely agree with it, but I do know that when we do not have enough God's love in our hearts, we can feel a void that is worse than any cold or any darkness that we might feel. There's a lot to know about God. Even Einstein could not understand everything about God. But Einstein knew God. And that's what's important for us. Einstein had this awe and reverence of God. So that's what I hope for the graduates on this day, as well as all of us, that we can begin to develop this awe and reverence of God when we realize how great God is. And then the second thing that I think we need to understand is that God has a purpose for us, each one of us. God created every one of us, and God is so great. God does not make mistakes. And so it's not a mistake that God created us. It's not a mistake that we are here. God gave each one of us special abilities, and we are expected to use them. Now, the graduates that are here today have all been active and used many of their talents in this church. And one of the things I was thinking of was this play. Robert was here. You remember what play this was, Robert? You've been in so many plays, you may not even remember which one this was. But this one was The Other Wise Man. He was the other wise man. Ricky was his father at this scene right here. But this is a fiction story, but a story of the other wise man who started out to give his gifts to the Christ child. Only because several things happened on the way, he missed meeting up with the other wise man, and then he missed the Christ child, and so he went to Egypt, and he spent his life trying to find the Christ child, find the Christ, to give his gift. And finally, it ends up that he's in Jerusalem at the time of the crucifixion, and he has one precious pearl left. And perhaps he was there just in time to use this gift to be able to save Jesus. But instead, he saves a slave girl instead. And then he falls down. And as he is about to die, feeling he has been a total failure with his life, he hears this voice from on high that says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. For if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me." It's a wonderful story with a great message, in that each of us have been given certain gifts, and we want to give them to God, but we give them by giving them to people in need. And God knows, and God understands this. Even from the vastness of God in the universe, no matter how great and how vast God is, God knows when we have done those things, when we have given our pearl to help someone, someplace. God knows and understands, for from that universe, God can look down and see and know where we are. And if you notice, that was not here in Michigan, but that was in Tipton, Indiana. And there's Julie when she's at a teen serve mission. I wanted to find a picture of her at a play that she wrote when she was in high school, but I thought this one would do, because here she was a college student, yet she gave up 2 weeks of her time to go on two different mission trips with a bunch of junior high and high school kids who would rather paint her than the houses that they had. But she was patient with them and learned, and the houses did get painted, and she did a lot of good. And God knew, and God understands, and God saw, even from the vastness of the universe, God knows and understands and sees our good deeds. And when there is special, beautiful music wafting up through the stars, God knows to look down and find Michael at our organ, right? Our God is an awesome God. He reigns from heaven above with wisdom, power, and love. Our God is an awesome God. Holy, holy, holy. Our heart knows how to say to you, O God, holy, are you, Lord? And we come on this day. We come to honor our graduates, for our graduates are finished with one phase of their life, but in a bigger sense, it's a new beginning in their life. Just like all of us are finished with the last phase of our life yesterday, we lived yesterday, and we have a new phase today, right? And it's a new beginning, and we want it to be a good beginning, and it will be a good beginning as we realize how great God is and how God has a purpose for us as we realize with reverence and awe that we need to fear the Lord and live our lives as God would have us to live, not because we're afraid so much of punishment, because we love God and we don't want God to be disappointed in us.